The Treasure of Catherick, coming up next on this special edition of The Right Stuff. Welcome to the special edition of The Right Stuff. The Queen is here, Parker J. Thank you so much for joining me. We're going to have a fantastic time as I talk with my guest co-host and contributor today, Brandon Wilborn. I'm so excited to showcase this book. It is a lovely, fast-paced, adventure-filled book if you love your fantasy, with lots of good interaction, multi-layer storytelling, and so much more. I can't wait to tell you all about it in just a few moments. As always, I want to thank you all for your support on my newest release. It's doing quite well, but I am preparing to send another one out called The Butcher's Daughter. Hopefully, we'll have it out by the end of the month, so I hope you stay tuned for that. And then next month is my birthday. I'll be celebrating my birthday next month, and so I'm going to be giving you an opportunity to win some prizes, and I'll be announcing how you can win a few prizes on Right Stuff next week, so stay tuned for that. Just really excited. It's a milestone birthday for me, so I'm excited. I thank the Lord for allowing me to continue to do this now for the past 8 years. And that he is allowing me, hopefully, to see a new year. It's very exciting. So I hope you join me in my birthday celebration. I want to thank our corporate sponsor, Christian Book Club, for their support. To find out how they can help you build your readership, go to christianbookclub.net. If you are a Christian author, you want to upload your book to an app solely dedicated to Christian fiction and nonfiction, go to readioapp.com. The app will be live soon. As soon as I hear about it, I will let you know. We also want to thank our Patreon team for their support. If you want to figure out where you can put your dollars, consider putting them here. We showcase Christian authors all over the world. And like I said, we've been doing that now for 8 years. If you want to join in that celebration, simply go to patreon.com/writestuff and see how you can help out. As always, we covet your prayers and we try to reach every Christian author in the world. If you want to weigh in on a topic, you know you can. All you got to do is call in at 646-668-8485, then press 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right stuff with your questions or comments. We'll be right back after these messages.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at authorshout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
How do fantasy and sci-fi help make us into better people? And how can Christians best glorify our Lord Jesus Christ as we enjoy these stories? Also, where can you find the best fantastical Christian novels? Yes, they do exist, and we know exactly where to find them.
From the creators of Lorehaven magazine and from biblical Christian storytellers around the world comes a new podcast for readers of amazing stories. We call it Fantastical Truth.
I'm E. Stephen Burnett.
And I'm Zachary Russell. Our mission is to find biblical truth in fantastic stories. We apply the wonders of these imaginary worlds to the real world our Creator has called us to serve.
Toward that chief end, we will find the best novels by Christian authors, fantasy, science fiction, and beyond. Together, we will explore these stories in light of the gospel, and we'll join these authors and other creative friends on this joyful journey to find the happiness and holiness of Jesus by exploring his gift of truthful imagination.
Please subscribe at lorehaven.com or on podcast players everywhere.
Join us in this eternal quest to seek and find fantastical truth.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to a special edition of The Right Stuff with the Queen, Parker J, on WPJC 104.5. Today, we're talking to my guest, co-host, and contributor, Brandon Wilborn, as we discuss the first book in his series, The Treasure of Caprick. And what's really exciting about this book is that if you love fantasy, like many of our listeners do, this book just drags you through every emotion you can possibly have with a fantasy. I was reading it today. Let me tell you, it is fast-paced, reads really easy. Even when the characters are talking, the conversation doesn't lag. The dialogue doesn't get old or anything like that. It just keeps going faster and faster and faster. And then by the time you're at halfway point, you're like, whew, that was a wild ride. And that is this book. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead, pick up your copy today. I can't wait to talk about it with my guest today. So let's bring him on board. Brandon, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I am fine, and thank you for taking time to be with me today. I never take it lightly that you're here, so I definitely want to give our listeners a chance to know more about The Treasure of Caprick. And with that in mind, I always ask you what, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, so go ahead and do that.
You know, you ask that question, and immediately your mind goes, what should I say about myself?
Right.
I grew up, I always wanted to write. I was always kind of afraid to write. And I, when I was in high school, I would just write pages and pages of these silly, like, haikus and just stuff, and then write silly stories. I liked Dave Barry, if you ever heard of him.
I have heard of him, yeah.
Comedy columnist, and I just loved his stuff in high school. So I wanted to write like him. So I started doing, like, these silly articles. And then I just... I always love stories, so I'm actually, even before that, I was in first grade or something, and our teacher had us write a story, and I had my first lesson in plagiarism, because I wrote a story based on a movie that I loved, and
right.
She said, you can't write that, that's not your story, but
love it.
I was finishing up seminary, and really, I felt like I was supposed to go to seminary, but I didn't know why, and then I ended up with a theological studies master's degree, and felt at the end of that, like, the answer for why was, here's a story I want you to tell, and this is your ministry, this is your way of sharing what you understand about Jesus and how you can reach people.
I like the fact that...
And five years later, here comes the book.
I like the fact you said that, though. I like that because there is a lot you can teach through fiction that you always can't teach through a Christian living book or a theological book. Not saying they aren't important, don't misunderstand me, but there's a lot you can do that
Absolutely.
You can really interweave with fiction. And Christian creatives have been doing that now for many years, and that's why we have our gold standards like J.R.R. Tolkien, like Narnia, depending on who you talk to, Narnia,
mm-hmm.
and depending on who you talk to about Lord of the Rings, depending on who you talk to. But what I like is that you said that because you can't interweave those very intricate details about Christian living through the vehicle of fiction. And particularly in the fantasy, there's so much world building that you can do. You create your own world. In your book, you have this gorgeous map. And I just started learning how to read maps like this year. I just learned how to read them, okay? Because beforehand, they were just abstract drawings. I'm like, oh, there's a map. That means nothing to me. Where's my GPS, right? So now I actually mm-hmm. know how to read a map. And north means north, and east is this way, and west is that way. That's south, and these are rivers. And these triangle things aren't just, you know, pretty triangles. They're mountains. So it was incredible that I know how to read a map down. So, yeah, very excited about that. So when you talk about going to seminary, how much of that is really interwoven in this book? Because most people think when you go to seminary, you should go into the heavy doctrines of the faith. But how much of that training prepared you for this book here?
More than I actually remember. I actually, in preparation for writing a sequel, I spent most of October going back through and trying to create a kind of a cheat sheet to all the details for myself. And mm-hmm. I kept stumbling across things and going, wait, was I trying to reference scripture there? I think I was. And then I would go I didn't always put it in my notes. So there's little bits in there that sometimes jump out at me that I'm like, I'm pretty sure I was referencing scripture, or maybe it was Pilgrim's Progress or something like that. But a theological studies degree is largely about, you know, getting into scripture and understanding it. And so I was trying to present in this book something that was, the premise was a religious people who lost the basis of their faith. And so what do they do? And how do they get it back?
I like that too, and that really comes off in the story, because the people are warrior monks. And when we say warriors, we're not talking, you know, swords, we're talking combat. They know how to fight with weapons, they know how to use their bodies, punches, you know, we're talking, they know how to fight. And one thing that impressed me was how much detail you went into building this world, because speculative fiction in general, one of the intoxicating parts of speculative fiction is the world building. And you mentioned that it took about 5 years before this idea germinated in your head to fruition now. So was it the world building that you were working on? Was it just things were happening that prevented you from writing it? I always like to ask this question, because many of our listeners out there, they say, I want to write a book, and then they say they can't. And then they say, well, I've been working on my book for 10 years. So I can't possibly write it now. And I want to always encourage them that it doesn't matter how long you've been working on it, as long as you get to the end. So tell us, what was the delay from 5 years to now?
Mostly putting roadblocks in my own way. I would get started, and then I would, you know, I got to the point of, I started getting some progress and getting some motion. I said, you know what, I really want to do this, but I have this reason, I have that reason, and most of it was work-related. And finally, my wife said, well, then, I worked for myself at the time, and my wife said, you know, take a day a week and just make that your writing day. And I made more progress. And then finally, we were about to have our first child, and she said, look, that baby's got to be born before this baby's born. So that was what really pushed me over the edge to just get it done.
I love it. And it is a book baby, isn't it? It is a book baby, definitely. I like the fact that she challenged you. Like, that baby's been germinating a lot longer than this one. So get it together. I love that. I love that. And so my next question has to do with the process, you know. So what is it about writing that you enjoy? Because many different authors who've been on the show have different reasons why they write. What is your reason for why you enjoy writing?
Honestly, I was inspired by Tolkien first, and that was the first book I read, was The Hobbit, that really I just devoured, and that was the start of me enjoying story really deeply. And as I found I enjoyed story deeply, it just dragged me into wanting to tell stories. And oddly enough, one of my first memories was telling this long story to my mom while I was 3 years old, and I don't remember what the story was about, but it went on, and she just sat and listened. And so I've just been a storyteller for a long time, but this desire to tell it in book format, it feels like it's always been there, and it feels like it's always been a calling and a draw. It's just been having the courage to step out and do it.
Yeah.
Does that answer the question?
Oh, it does, because I definitely agree with you about having the courage to do that, and the fact that you've always been a storyteller. I think I'm one of the few people who knew I wanted to write, like, from a very young age, and some people are still looking for their purpose. I knew my purpose would be in writing, and I didn't know it would be in podcasting, but I knew it would definitely be in writing. And so
I do think there is a distinction there, though. You just said purpose, and in college, I was looking at pursuing an English degree in order to write. But the things that I was trying to write in college would not have glorified God. They would not have led to a good purpose. And that is where stuff like this, I feel like it gives me more meaning than just, well, I get to tell stories. So it's fun. It's got way more behind it, and that's important.
And that's something a lot of Christian authors say. It's not just telling a good story. it's telling a story with a purpose. And your story definitely has that. So if an unbeliever, I believe an unbeliever could read the story and enjoy it thoroughly just as much as someone who is a believer. You know what I mean? Because you write in that genre there. Go ahead.
I've had a few people who were definitely not believers say they enjoyed it despite any religious contacts or messages within it. They still thought it was a good read.
And I think that's the point. You know, that's the point, is to create.
Which surprises
that
me, because I always feel like they're
going to
get upset about it.
Oh, they may do. You know, hey, it's not over yet. You may get that one saying, I can't believe this author did this, and who wants to hear about, you know, I'm surprised. It does happen. It does definitely happen. So, you know, keep holding on, Brandon. You'll get that review soon.
Okay.
I'm just joking, because it's a really good read. If they don't like it, it's because it's a personal thing. It has nothing to do with the quality, your words, your skills, or anything like that. It's a definitely good read. Like I was telling you today, when I started reading it today, I mean, I was flying through this book, because you're not verbose. You're very articulate. And the way you use words, I found it quite interesting, because they're very blunt and to the point, but they're not flowery. And I tend to be someone told me recently, said, Parker, you talk a lot, so your books, you talk a lot too, right? So you're verbose and things of that nature. I said, I can't help it, I'm a gabber. So I like that they were very to the point. Even when you were describing things, you used words that were easy to understand. I could visualize the monastery on top of the hill. I could see the tree. I could also see the monks and what they were wearing, because you use those words very effectively. And especially with some of the fight scenes that are coming through, the fight scenes are very, they're not so heavy with action that you can't follow it. It's just enough that you can visualize the scene happening. So your words and skills really do shine out. That's why, you know, I'm telling our listeners out there, they really will enjoy getting their copy of this book. And you talked about how
you wanted to.
Oh, it's just the truth. I don't have to lie on the show. I don't have to lie. It's a good book. You know what I mean?
I appreciate it. I think part of that bluntness might come from a few years of writing advertising copy.
Because advertising is about getting to the point. We want you to buy this now. You have to get it. It's like that episode.
Yeah, and that practice kicked the flowery out for a while.
It reminds me of that episode of Twilight Zone, the new one with Peele, Jordan Peele. And he, in one of the episodes, is called You May Also Like. It's a horrible episode. I didn't like it at all. But that you have to get it. You have to get it. The way they do the copy, you have to get this thing that everybody wants, but no one knows what it is. Right? And then they all die. But spoiler alert, they all die. So, you know, that bluntness in advertising, I would not have thought it could work in this, but I noticed that you're just very strategic with your writing. So that's what makes the book very enjoyable. That's why it reads so fast, because you don't have that. So I really enjoyed that part of it. So yeah, definitely like it. And for those of you listening in, we're talking to my guest co-host and contributor, Brandon Wilborn. He is the author of The Treasure of Capric. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. When we come back from our break, we're going to dig deep into the book and talk about this wonderful world that Brandon has built, book one of the series, and we're going to get more behind the scenes of who he is as a writer. You can weigh in on the conversation by calling in at 646-668-8485, then press 1 to be live on air. Hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag write stuff with your questions or comments. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Hi. Is your book club in need of some fresh and exciting questions to ask club members and authors at your next book club meeting? Literisations, the book conversation game, is 70 thought-provoking questions to really get into an in-depth discussion books you and your club members are reading. These questions really get into the characters, the storyline, and into the author's head. These questions may just give you and your book club members a whole new way to get into a new conversation, a literisation. Literisations is also a great set of tools for bloggers, interviewers, and authors to use a discussion question. Are you ready to get lit? Please visit our website at litversations.com, L-I-T-V-E-R, SATION.com. And please like our Facebook page at Simply Said Reading Accessories. Thank you.
Have you read the latest issue of SOARMAG Digital, the award-winning literary magazine for multicultural readers and writers? SOARMAG Digital is available quarterly and showcases interviews with the best authors in multicultural literature. SOARMAG Digital features craft and business articles for those interested in writing. If you're looking for a good book, check out our book reviews on what's hot in multicultural literature. For writers looking for new readers to get in front of, SOARMAG Digital is the perfect place to introduce your book. We offer advertising spaces that fit your promotional budget. Get your free subscription on SOARMAG.com. Or order a print issue on magcloud.com. If you would like more information about SOARMAG Digital, check us out on SOARMAG.com or contact us at SOARMAG@yahoo.com. SOARMAG Digital is the magazine for multicultural readers and writers.
Hi, and welcome back to the special edition of The Right Stuff. The Queen, Parker J, is here. We're talking to my guest co-host and contributor, Brandon Wilborn. He is the author of the book, The Treasure of Capric. It is available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. You're definitely going to enjoy this book. Make sure you go ahead and pick up a copy today and find out what all the fuss is about. It's gotten wonderful reviews, and once you pick up your copy, you'll definitely understand why. And Brandon, once again, thank you for being with me, helping me out with the show today as we just talk about this lovely book that I'm sure many of our listeners are going to pick up and get a copy of. But I got to, first of all, we have to give a shout out to your cover design artist, because the cover is richly detailed. It really captures your eye. And one of my pet peeves about book covers is when it's too crowded. And this is not crowded at all. It tells a message. Even the fact that we don't have our protagonist looking at us, he's looking back, like he's just as shocked as we are, right? That, oh, my gosh, there's a problem.
When I first saw the, I guess it was a draft, but there almost no changes were made. But when I first saw it, my jaw dropped because I had commissioned this. I mean, it's a digital painting, but it looks like an oil painting. And I grew up, while I was taking English as my major in college, I was doubling in painting. And I never got this good. I wish this was me. But, my jaw dropped, and I just looked at composition and everything, and I just loved it. So I had him do I just reached out to him the other day to get ready for the second cover.
One thing about the cover, too, is that I got the feeling that the way he did the cover, you're with the character seeing this. So he's right in front of you watching this happen. And then it talks about you see the village on the side, you see the mountain, you see the fire. And it's just a really killer cover. So we want to definitely just say his name and say thank you for his service in doing this, because book covers are an essential part of book marketing. Mm-hmm.
Okay, the name that he told me was Darko Tomic. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's his real name or not, but that is what he goes by. And his, I'll be honest, some of his other stuff is in the fantasy realm. It gets a little dark sometimes, but he delivered just this beautiful shock and surprise as the main character, Kurian, discovers his home on fire for the first time.
Oh, for sure. And first, when you said Darko, I mean, Danny Darko, that movie with the bunny, evil-looking bunny.
That might be
Danny
why
Darko.
I'm suspicious.
Danny Darko. Yeah, I remember that movie. That was a creepy movie back in the day, too. But I'm pretty sure he does probably do other things. But that's the thing about talent. You can really go this way or that way with it. But we definitely want to give a shout-out to you, sir. You did a great job with the cover. Now let's go and dig down into this book here, because this book is multi-layered, multifaceted. Lots of good things are going on in this story. So go ahead, tell us initially, when we start to read this book, where are we in this book? What's going on here? So go ahead and tell us about it.
We are in the post-golden age of a place called Pollingham. And we're introduced into a middle of a monastery where there are young boys who at 7 years old, they're dropped off here by their parents. They're accepted. Then they have 10 years or more of intense both education but also intense training to be protectors of this treasure. And the main character, you know, he has his doubts about whether this is really for God or what they're doing exactly, because they have all these stories about, kind of like David the Mighty Men, these stories of these guys who went out and fought lions and gathered treasures and found relics and all these amazing things, and that's not happening anymore. That and the entire country is covered in a blanket of cloud 24/7. So it's in kind of a dark place.
One thing about the monastery that I liked is you do mirror certain monastery, you know, sites here, but you did put your own spin on it, which I like. The thing about the fabled treasure is that there's one point where a person asks him, hey, have you ever seen it? He's like, no, we've never seen it. Only the sage was the head, the abbot, rather, of the monastery.
Yeah, he'd be the abbot.
Only he's seen it. Yeah, he'd be the abbot. Thank you. He'd be the abbot, not the sage. His name is Sage Martin, but he's
his,
the abbot
it's a little strange in just the world-roving side of like, okay, he's an abbot, but let's give him a very different role. And so it's in this monastery in particular, since they're warriors, there's the educational leader, and then there's the kind of the warrior leader who's the protector. So Sage is the educational leader, who's the abbot, and then the other guy is
the ward.
Suddenly, the ward, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ward. And so I like entering here into this place here, and they go on these what they call mercy mission, these mercy trips. And these mercy trips, they basically are doing the bare minimum. But this becomes problematic for Kurian, who we're following through the story. We follow several different characters, but our main protagonist is Kurian. And it becomes problematic for him. And without giving away too many spoilers, I don't think this is spoiler as much as just a way of seeing how things are. What is the problem he sees when they go on these mercy trips, or mercy visits, rather?
Well, like I said, he's grown up. He's about 17, and he's grown up hearing these stories of these grand adventures and these heroes of essentially of the faith for them. And that's not what he's seeing. All he's seeing is the few monks that are left going into the village nearby and kind of helping out this dying village where they can. But he's not seeing all of these grand adventures and stories and, you know, big signs and wonders like he's been told were part of their history. And that obviously, for a young man, is like, well, wait, you're telling me this, but this is what I'm seeing, and you get that disconnect.
And I think that happens a lot even today. We have these wonderful stories, specifically in the Bible, of miracle signs and wonders. And there are people who believe those things don't happen anymore. They think, oh, we don't have that type of thing. And I refuse to believe that. I will not sit up here and say we don't have miracles anymore. We just had one at our church, and I'll talk about it some other time. But the fact that he has this, it mirrors what is going on in today's body of Christ today, that people don't believe that there are these fantastical elements of our faith, like our God is not supernatural, like he doesn't enter through time and enter through the impossible and fix it, you know what I mean? And was that something that you deliberately wanted to show with our character, Kurian?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you just read through a scene where that comes out, you know, as a key point of the scene as they're traveling through the ruins of what used to be the capital city. But the point is, you know, he's seeing this and he's not seeing it, and it makes him doubt God. It makes him doubt his faith. And not to get into the argument about obviously, you're on the side of miracles. You're not a cessationist, but I struggled with that as somebody studying theology of this particular argument about miracles, because one of my own experience with God, I had seen things that you could not explain unless God was involved, and then I had heard things from around the world. You go to seminary, you meet a lot of missionaries, and they tell you some wacky stories about what God's doing, And then I was assisting the youth groups in the churches that I've been a part of in the past 10 years, And that's exactly the way the youth feel, is this doesn't feel real, this doesn't feel relevant. And so I definitely put that in there as one of the primary themes, is miracle versus magic, and miracle versus this idea that, well, God doesn't really get involved anymore.
And some of us would think, well, he shouldn't, because look how far we've come down and blah, blah, blah. And God says, I love you. And that's what he says. He does not abandon us that he loves us. If anything, he chastises us. He says he chastises those that he loves, you know. So what we have this story happening.
May I recommend a book if somebody wants to get into it?
Sure.
It's actually a huge book, and it's both a theological, philosophical volume, and then there's a bunch of live examples that he examines directly. It's called Miracles by Craig Keener.
Okay.
Great book
to
get into if you want to see what God has been doing in the world in the past 200 years.
Amen. I love stuff like that. Like I said, we had one happen in our church recently, and there is no other explanation but the Lord. There is no other explanation. There is no scientific. There is no medical. There is no other explanation that a guy said, guess what I can do? You know, it was just a wonderful test of faith when I saw our brother get miraculously healed, and it was beautiful. I was crying and just really emotional about it with him, you know. And I loved it. We'll talk about
it. And it should.
But, yeah.
It should always cause us to praise, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Because what else can we do?
Because what else can you do? You know, the doctor said, this is not going to get better. You might as well, you know, turn in the towel and get ready to meet your Lord. And he rescues you from that. And it was incredible, absolutely incredible. So, yeah, so I'm definitely not one of those people who says miracles don't happen anymore. If anything, that just reinvigorated my belief, you know, it reinvigorated, like, you know what, Lord, nothing's too hard for you. Do I really believe that? You know, these are the things that, again, in this book, it's layered in there, but it's done in such a way that you don't even know that you're exploring these things through the novel, because it's so much layered. It's subtle. It's a subtleness that starts to become more apparent as you follow along in Curran's journey. Now, he's not alone.
So you're calling me blunt but subtle.
blunt but subtle.
Okay.
You can knock someone out with a silk cover of stick. Okay, so it's not so subtle. you can definitely do that. So yeah, for sure. So, but he's not alone in this journey. He has two friends with him on this journey. So let's find out what starts them on their journey that we are following here.
They find out that the treasure is missing from, you know, the vault underneath the hill that they live on that they thought was so secure. They find out that it was missing. So that is what really sets them off to then go find it. And at the same time, there is an enemy, the, you know, highly ambitious noble who lives not too far from their monastery, who is also seeking it. And so it becomes this kind of race against, like a national treasure type of race. They're all trying to figure it out. Nobody really knows what it is. And so they're all trying to go get it because of this prophecy that it will lead to power.
I'm glad you said National Treasure, because I love that movie. It's one of my few Nicolas Cage movies that I like. And I love National Treasure. I love the story, the clues, everything. It was nice to have a treasure hunt in the U.S., you know what I mean? But, yeah, it was I like that movie. So now it's in my head. Thank you for distracting me. Now it's in my head. It's in my head now, Brandon. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a really quick break. When we come back, we're going to delve more into The Treasure of Capric, available again on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. So make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. You can also weigh in by calling in at 646-668-8485. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned.
Authors, are you looking for a new way to get your book in the hands of new audience of targeted buyers? Then a virtual book tour is for you. Right now, virtual book tours is an excellent opportunity for you to introduce your book and who you are as an author. Launching your book is very important. A virtual book tour will connect you with readers, We at WNL, we specialize in book tours, book blasts, radio tours, cover reveals, and Facebook chat. Promoting and marketing your book is what we do. Online publicity, the exposure and the publicity is what you need. Let us help you reach new readers and a new audience. We take care of everything so you don't have to. We set up the tour for you. We connect you with bloggers to advertise your book by way of interviews, guest posts, and reviews. If you are an author of a newly published book, have an upcoming release, or just want to give a previously published book new life, a virtual book tour is your answer. Check our tours out at www.wnlbooktours.com. Visit me on Facebook. I am the owner, Paulette Harper.
Christian authors and writers, welcome to Readio. Readio app, developed exclusively for showcasing Christian fiction and nonfiction ebooks and audiobooks. Tired of book sales plummeting due to algorithm-influenced unrelated classifications? Books lost amongst non-Christian content? Readio allows you to reach your target audience who's eager to devour your Most High God-inspired books in a variety of Christian subgenres. You write in a niche market. Readio solely caters to it. Follow at Readio App today on social media or visit readioapp.com to know when we are accepting author catalog uploads. Readio, the best app for the Most High-influenced ebooks and audiobooks.
Hi, my name is Kevin Newsom, and I am the host of the Christian Arts and Entertainment Podcast. I am an author, musician, and worship pastor. On my podcast, we talk art and entertainment in all its forms, music, writing, movies, art, and more. Join us each week as we wrestle with two questions. What is the Christian artist's responsibility when creating art? And what is the Christian consumer's responsibility when consuming art? You'll find the Christian Arts and Entertainment Podcast on your favorite podcast platform and in full video on YouTube. Go to www.pressepic.com for more information. Be sure to subscribe on YouTube and in your podcast app, and I'll see you soon.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to the special edition of The Right Stuff with the Queen as I chit-chat and talk with my guest co-host today, Brandon Wilborn. He is the author of the book, The Treasure of Capric, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. If you like high fantasy that's fast-paced and adventurous, this is for you. And Brandon, once again, thank you for joining us on the show. I'm having such a great time talking to you. And I want to dig some more into this because I found it interesting that you use the element of warrior monks as the order in this story, because most people are used to seeing monks in a very meek light. But in this case, they're warrior monks. And that is something I think about the Shaolin monks in China and those places. Mm-hmm. So you don't see that a lot. So I wanted to know, what was your thought process behind utilizing that element?
You know, it's funny. I always want to go back to, like, well, this Shaolin monks, but that is obviously not a very Christian example. But that's the one that comes most easily. But
I know, right?
In reality, I it does. It's like, oh, of course. Part of it was just, okay, I'm imagining these guys as monks, but they're protecting something. Well, if they're going to protect something, they need to be able to protect something. And so part of it was just a story necessity. But then I was also reading through Samuel, and he's bad. I mean, Samuel as an old man is taking names and just, he's taking out bad guys sometimes. Every mm-hmm. once in a while, you know, Saul won't do it, Samuel does. So how am I trying to say this? There are examples within Scripture of people who are very righteous and following God, but who are still very strong and they're protectors and defenders and trying to fight for what's right in a godly way.
I'm so glad you said that, because the first thing I was thinking about was Abraham when he had to go get Lot. And Abraham was an older gentleman by this time. Yeah, he was older. He was like, okay, they got my nephew. Let's go get him. Let's ride. Let's ride. Go get my nephew. And he took him on. And then I think about, of course, David's mighty men. And even David, the mighty man, was like, look, David, when he started to get weaker, you know, they said, we'll take care of it, you know. And I love mm-hmm. those stories, because it lets us know that they're not, I guess we want to sometimes see them as so pious that they forget that we're human and flawed. We forget that.
Yeah.
And I think I was just literally yesterday, Brandon, I was looking at clips on YouTube about the strong man competition. And there's this one guy, this man is huge. He's 7 feet tall. He looks big as a barn.
Oh.
And he picked up like 1,100 pounds, messed up his body. But the fact that he lifted it up for 2 seconds, you know,
wow.
I mean, massive. And it's just the fact that strength is something that we can utilize for the Lord as well. Sometimes we utilize it for our own glory, but it's also being utilized for the Lord. In this case, well, it's not the Lord per se in this case. They're protecting this fabled treasure, whatever it is. Because when they find out that it's missing, they don't even know what it is. They're like, it's gone. Let's go get it back. Okay, so they don't know what it is.
But their history is that they're doing this to serve God. So they at least have some level of, okay, we're doing this for God. But they're not still, they're in the dark.
Yes. And I like that a little bit because sometimes it's about the trusting the Lord, even when you don't understand what's going on, you know. And one of the things that the monks find out about themselves, there's a scene where Kurien and his friends, they actually use their skills that they learned in training in real combat. And it was a scary moment for Kurien because all this time he had been training, but now he had to use it. And what I love about that scene is that this guy who they fought, he's not new to the game of combat. But they were so fast, so good at what they did, he got taken by surprise. And I love that scene. And Kurien is just a shock, like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe I did that. And he's amazed by his own strength, too. And then within their group is, if I was going to put these like a face on these guys, and I'm not saying, I know this because they're like 17, 15, something like that. If I was going to put a face on these guys, but they're not 15. I will say, like, Reese, which is one of his friends, would be The Rock. That's Reese. He's, like, this big, huge dude. And then
not too far off.
And then the younger one would be Tom Holland, which is Spider-Man. He would be the younger one, okay? And if I was going to put a face on Kurien, it would probably be, because he's my celebrity crush right now, Michael B. Jordan. Okay, so that's my face I'm putting on these.
Okay, okay.
But just that's how I see it, you know. So they got these different levels of strength. And his friends are just a perfect foil to his character, too. There's this classicness of these three friends that work together and they're monks. And so tell us about their dynamic as they go on this journey and how it affects Kurien's own journey of discovery about why he is here to do what he's doing.
So Tobin is the younger one, and Kurien considers him his best friend. Tobin is you see it a lot. You see the three friends. There's always the kind of the comic relief. There's the scholar, and then there's the one who's kind of in the middle, who's usually the protagonist, right? And so Kurien is a bit the politician, but he's the one who can talk people into things. He's convincing, and he's kind of a rounded out character. Tobin, he loves the books and the history and the getting into the politics and the details of things, but he's the true believer. Tobin absolutely believes in the whole mission of he's excited to go on these mercy missions where Kurien is feeling like this is pointless. These people are going to be dead in a year. Why are we going and just prolonging their misery? And then Reese is just, imagine a giant hobbit who's a wrestler.
Right.
He wants to eat and goof off and fight. And so your question about how to take Kurien.
Yeah.
So he relies on Tobin a lot for when they're in conversations or when they're trying to figure things out, and then he's relying on Reese when they're in trouble.
Yeah, and Reese is like this, you know, he's super strong and he likes the thrill of the battle. But he's also a good sport because when he and Kurien, this is in the beginning of the book, so it's not a spoiler, when he and Kurien are training, they combat. But Reese's problem is that he gets mad and he just goes off the deep end. And it reminds me of some of the movies where they kind of go, You're like, calm down. You know, you really do have to fight the guy. You just can't, you know, throw rocks at him. But with Reese, I actually like his character a lot because he's about eating, sleeping, you know, fighting. He's very simple, but he's not, but he's still a dynamic character. That's what I mean. Like, they all come off with this very, go ahead.
He's a little bit of a jock, if you want to stereotype him, but he's loyal. That is his main strength. Other than, I mean, his strength of character is he's loyal.
Then there's another character that we deal with too, and he's the dean of the order here, and he's training these two, and he and Kurian
he's their permanent teacher.
And he's very not antagonistic, but he does Kurian a hard time. So his role in all this is actually a very interesting one because he's teaching them all these things, but all three of them receive his teachings in different ways. Like Reese, okay, it could be one or the other. He's just here along for the ride. Whereas Tobin is a full believer. He totally believes, but Kurian is skeptical. And I think their dynamic as they approach their teacher differs from – for each other. So it makes me wonder, do you think the dean just didn't like Kurian? Is it just he saw some himself in Kurian? You know, what is that dynamic between all three of them that they have with the dean?
You said you don't like spoilers. So in the simplest terms,
okay,
it's not a huge spoiler, but the dean, he's a disciplinarian. And so he truly cares about these kids, but the way that the kids receive it is he's always hard on me. But the dean is basically doesn't want Kurian to waste his potential. He sees so much more that he could be doing. And the way, but he's not, I guess, emotionally aware enough to get through that that's his motivation. So Kurian just thinks this guy hates me.
One aspect, too, about the book is this journey. So they meet another character here, and I don't want to give too many spoilers away, but she's a character in the story. And I like her, too, because she's extremely versatile, and you don't have her in a typical way. She's not a stereotypical female character, and that's always been one of the critiques about fantasy is that sometimes the women are stereotypical in their portrayal, and that's the least that you did in this story, that she's not a stereotypical character. Tell about Louise.
Louise is essentially a spy. I don't know how much you would like me to tell here. She has information. And at first she does not trust them at all. She thinks they're working for the evil politician guy or the noble, and she does not trust them, but she knows something, and she can take them further. And so she, because of her own reasons, offers to guide them. And she's got secrets, and so they don't trust her.
Exactly, and I like that. That's what I'm saying. She's not like, oh, save me, you poor people. Man, she could take care of herself, but actually she's taking care of them. So she's a stronger female character. And that's, like I said, always been one of the critiques of fantasy in general.
She fits in the middle. I've been watching The Outpost a lot lately with my wife.
Oh, yeah?
If you've seen that show. And the main character is she is tough. She can beat any man. She can just do anything. But, it's a fairly good show. And she's not human, so that kind of comes into play. Maybe she's stronger. But you get the extremes. You get the princess who needs saving, or you need the super tough girl who can beat up G.I. Joe. Louise is neither of those.
Yeah. And I think actually, that's another subject for another time. I won't go into that. That's another subject for another time we'll go into. But anyway, so let me get some of the practicalities of it. So I know our listeners have been just tantalized by a lot of things that we say, and the book is really this good. So make sure you pick up your copy of The Treasure of Capric today on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Now, my next question just kind of deals with what else are you working on right now as we get ready to end our show. What else are you working on right now? What can we expect to see in the future?
I have been working on getting audio done. That's obviously a long process. And then, of course, it's a longer process to get it approved, it seems. So that's eventually coming. I am working on book two. I don't believe in writer's block, but I believe in not having enough knowledge to be able to get something done. And that's where I've been stuck. So I've needed to learn some things both practically and from God to be able to write book two. Because whereas, I can't share it because it's going to be a spoiler.
Don't share anything.
The main question in book one was, or the premise was, a religious people who don't have the core of their faith. And then I'll just say the main question from a Christian perspective of book two would be waiting.
Oh my gosh!
Think Abraham.
Imagine. Yeah.
All right. So
I can just imagine. We hate
quick
waiting.
Teaser for book two. Kurian kind of turns into a spiritual Robin Hood, and kind of David, like it's kind of like David's Mighty Men and before he becomes king situation. So they're. Yeah, that's the spoiler for number two. I hope to get that done later on this year. In the meantime, though, I just put this out to the world and the public that I took my publishing imprint that I created just to publish this book, just for taxes and stuff, and I felt like God was pushing some stories on me that I needed to tell, but I couldn't tell myself. I didn't have time for, and I said I got to publish those. And so I'm working with some other authors where I'm having them write the stories. I'm editing them, and then we're putting them out under a pen name. So it's not explicitly Christian, but it is from a Christian worldview, trying to uphold, if you liked National Treasure, trying to uphold those ideas of our heritage and our traditions as being good things that, you know, freedom of speech and freedom of religion and those things are really good, but they're thrillers. They're modern thrillers kind of set in the near future. So that's a completely different direction, but that's what I've been working on this past few months since we first met.
Awesome. I like that. So let them know. I understand. Let them know, hey, if they want to showcase it on the show, just send them to me. I'd be more than happy to do that. And
okay.
Like
I said, they're not explicitly Christian. They're just from a Christian worldview. So,
That's fine. But it's interesting. So, and that, we'll talk offline about that. But I'm just, you know, I like hearing about that. And then the next question I had to ask you was, how have readers responded to Touch Our Catholic?
My mom loved it.
Well, she better, right?
Everybody's got to say. Everybody knows that's the big secret of self-published authors. My mom loved it. She's actually in the dedication because she's part of what got me loving stories. So, and she may be listening if you're out there. I love you, Mom. I've gotten a really good presentation. I think my favorite was a young. I put it out early before it got published to some people through some advanced reader copy sites, and I got back this one from this probably 14, 15 year old young man, and he asked. He said he's got a fan YouTube channel for this particular book series for this youth book. And I'm like, okay, he wants to do a review on his YouTube channel. And he just, he went on and loved it. But he had really dug in and read. And this was, I think, a new type of book for him in that it was so explicitly Christian. And so that seeing that reaction of, I love this book and it's got so much deep. And he was really, really fascinated by the religious aspect of it. And like, that is who I want to be writing for right there. Even though he's a little bit young in my mind for some of the elements of the book, but that was my favorite.
Well, it's a good sign actually that kids are asking questions and that they're very much active in that. I remember reading books that I shouldn't have been reading at a very young age. So, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
And my mom knows about it. I remember my mom, I used to read Stephen King when I was younger. I've said this before. And my mom didn't know that. So I would just pull off the cover so she would know. So yeah, totally, totally understand that. So that's a good, and that's probably, maybe he was the one you had to do it for. You never know what that seed will drop another seed or drop another seed, or drop another seed. You never know how that stuff works. So in the few moments you have left, I would love for you to give us your social media outlets.
Social media outlets. Okay. I am on with website. Okay.
Certainly is.
Is website okay? Okay. Both my books and the books that I just told you about that are being published, these little short pieces that are in Thriller, are on beaconcreativepublishing.com. You can find just my books at brandonwilborn.com. No U's, no E's, just W-I-L-B-O-R-N. And then I'm on Facebook at BM Wilborn Author, Facebook Beacon Publishers, and I just jumped on MeWe because I know some of my readers are out there on there. So MeWe, Beacon Publishers.
In the few moments we have left, Brandon, and I want to thank you so much for being with me today, I want you to encourage our authors out there whom God has given the gift to write to pick up the pen and do so.
Okay, this is the part I actually felt like I needed to think about and write something from your email.
All right.
I've heard a lot of this frequently, especially lately. All of a sudden in the past week, I've heard this advice coming up a lot in different ways. And the standard one is write every day or just start. Like, those are the two things you hear all the time. And maybe you've done that. Maybe you haven't. Maybe it's just been a dream that you've held on to. I would add a couple of things. Ask yourself, what's the next step? What next step does God want you to take, or what next step would get you closer to where he wants you? And if you want to write, ask yourself, or if you know what you want to write, ask yourself what you need to do to get to that next step, to fulfill that dream or to fulfill that calling. And then the second thing that just goes along with this is step out in courage and faith.
I like the fact that you said step out in courage and faith. That is almost the underlying theme in The Treasure of Capric. I can definitely see that there. And it is courage.
Preaching to myself.
Out there. You know, it is courage, though. It takes a lot to write a book and then to send it out for public consumption that people can take your hard-earned work, read it in a couple of hours, and then say, yeah, you know. And it is hard to hear one say, oh, I didn't like this book, but it's even better when someone says, I really enjoyed this book. But it takes courage to be vulnerable. And that is something that is difficult for a lot of people because they write their story, but they're too nervous about what the reaction will be because they put themselves into the book. But it does take courage and it does take faith that the Lord has given you a message to write that has to reach not everyone's ear, but just one person's ear. I always think I write for that one person who needs to hear what I have to write. I always write just for that one person. And I think that one person.
My inspiration for
this. What were you going to say?
Yeah, my inspiration from this week was actually I was reading back through Matthew, and I just had this thing hit me in the chest. Like, Jesus debated the people he knew wanted to kill him, and he was not just nice.
Mm-hmm. That'll go somewhere. And I want to thank you so much, Brandon, for being with me on the show today. Really enjoyed having you.
Thank you.
When book two is done, let me know. We'll have you back and hopefully have you back real soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
And we were talking today to Brandon Wilborn. He is the author of the book, The Treasure of Capric, available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Make sure you go ahead and pick up your copy today. I really have been enjoying reading his book today. And like I said, I don't have to lie about the books I read on this show. They really are that good. And every week we're presented with new books, with new ideas, new messages. And this book is just very, very, I want to use the word, it's very relevant for the times we live in, that you may think God doesn't work in miracles. You may think God is not here. You may think your faith isn't real. And maybe you're just going through the motions. Maybe you're just doing the exercises, the routines. But God is calling you on a journey to get to know more about him. And that is probably the hidden treasure. I don't know what the hidden treasure is, but that's probably the hidden treasure for us that we haven't even found yet, is that this relationship with him is going to carry us somewhere greater and better. And if you are a writer whom God has given the gift to write, why aren't you picking up the pen and writing stuff? Thank you so much for joining me for this special edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the Queen, Parker J. You have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.